She'll be back down in a minute. This is the 16th of March, 1987, the regularly scheduled meeting of the Senate Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee.
Senate Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee will come to order. Clerk will note the members present. The others are excused. We've got a couple things on the agenda that I want to move through very quickly. First, we want to hear a report from the Department of Environmental Quality on the negotiation sessions that have been underway on the state Superfund bill. Mr. Hansen. While he is coming up, we're going to move then very quickly into a work session on Senate Bill 843, which is a fishery bill, and then have a very brief public hearing on Senate Bill 842 with two witnesses, and then we will open the public hearing on 508 relating to the wine coolers and the bottle bill. It's my understanding there are a number of people from the eastern part of the state who have traveled here to testify on Senate Bill 970, and I want to make sure that people who've traveled a long distance do get heard, so we may need to cut off testimony for a little while on the bottle bill and go to the smoke management bill so that those people who've traveled from LeGrand can provide their testimony to us. With that, Mr. Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Fred Hansen, a director of the Department of Environmental Quality. Over the last week, there have been really marathon sessions involving all the major players on the state Superfund bill. They have been negotiating. This last weekend saw a breakthrough on a number of issues, and what we have is a draft bill that we would like authorization from the committee to be able to take to legislative council for final form on that piece of legislation. Now, there are a couple of things. As we've quickly reviewed it, there are a couple of those technical issues we want to make sure that is a part of the request that we can work with council on and have included. And secondly, there are couple of issues that were not able to be resolved in the negotiations, which we would expect to be able to bring back to you for your final determination. If you'd like any specifics, we can talk about it, but that's kind of the status.
I'd rather, we're going to have a full-blown committee session on the whole issue next Monday, so I prefer to keep the specifics out of it until then. I would certainly, it would be a request from me that you get those amendments drafted and take that to council. I think that's all you need is a request from me to do that.
That's correct, and only that we would allow, that we'd be allowed to work with legislative council with final refinements in that process also, when
right.
We expect that.
Yeah, fine.
Senator, did you say a new bill, or was this be amendments to 123?
No, this is amendments to 122.
Yeah.
Yes, it will be, although we do think that probably the easiest way to deal with that is to strike everything after the enacting clause, just for ease of reading it as much as anything
sure.
else.
Absolutely. I would concur.
All
you
right.
come up with the, basically an engrossed version, which will
yes.
be a new bill. Okay.
That's
fine. I'm real excited that you managed to get to some point of consensus or near consensus on this issue.
The players that have worked have spent lots of very long hours. On weekends included.
So don't talk to me about overtime, okay? Thank you, Fred.
Thank you.
Okay, I want to open the work session on Senate Bill 843. We have amendments. 843 is the bill that relates to modifying some of the conditions in the salmon limited entry program, and it the amendments that Senator Brennan brought forward also modify the shrimp limited entry program. We went to council and got amendments drafted that incorporated their 843-3. They're in your committee file. And those amendments incorporate both the Department of Fish and Wildlife's concerns and the concerns that were raised during testimony about how we wanted the whole shrimp system to operate. Senator Brennan, do you have...
I don't have a copy.
Okay.
Which one?
Do we have a copy of the amendment?
Senator Brennan,
stuck here.
In hearing.
Also, Mr. Chairman.
No, we need to get you a copy.
Bye-bye.
Jackie, do we have a copy, another copy of the 843-3 amendment?
Yeah. I've got one.
Here's one. So on. Okay, there is one change that has been proposed by council as they thought more about what they drafted. And the change would be on page 2 of the 843-3 amendment, page 2, line 21. There would be, after the therefore, a period, deletion of the rest of the sentence until the total number of permits issued during the calendar year is 188. That would be deleted. And in its place would be a new sentence that reads, however, the number of permits issued pursuant to any such lottery shall not increase the total number of permits issued to a number greater than 188. And basically, council's concern was that the way the language was drafted in lines 21 and 22, it would require the department to issue exactly 188 permits, not 187 permits, or I mean, by some quirk, it might turn out that they only issued 187. So he rewrote it.
Could you read that again, please?
Sure. What he's rewriting it to would say, however, the number of permits issued pursuant to any such lottery shall not increase the total number of permits issued to a number greater than 188. I apologize. This is how council gave it to me. So I apologize that I don't have it for you in written form. But it was Chuck Wilson thought about it and decided this would be a better way to state the same thing. Basically, the concern that was raised, well, there were two concerns. One was the way the way Senator Brennan's amendments were originally drafted, there's a proposal in the bill that would allow shrimp fishermen who landed shrimp with a single delivery permit to get a regular permit, shrimp permit, if they landed a single delivery permit in 1986. They would then qualify for a regular permit. That was the proposal that was in your amendments. The way the language was written, they would have qualified for that permit if, as long as there weren't more than 188 permits outstanding. And it was the testimony of the shrimp fleet that they wanted to be sure those people qualified for permits no matter how many permits there were. So we've revised the language to make it clear that those people get permits. That then the lottery for permits only kicks in if the number of permits falls below 188, and that the first people in line for that lottery are those who have delivered shrimp with a single delivery permit, and they are the first people to qualify for permits from the lottery. After all of those people have gotten permits from the lottery, then it would go to any other individual.
And only up at that time to 188.
Right. At that time, up to 188. The lottery only kicks in when the number of permits has fallen below 188, and it only brings the number of permits back to 188. But initially, we're going to go above 188 because of all these single delivery permit people being added to the permit rolls.
What's the history of the 188? How do we get that figure?
John?
You know, I can't say where the magic number of 188 came from, except to say they seem to think that number makes a good management of the shrimp populations. And I don't know if the department can give any sound basis for that or not, but I kind of doubt it. I think that just they've determined that that's the number that manages the fishery correctly.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Can you give me any clue as to, can you give us any clue as to the magic of 188?
Sure. For the record, I'm Kay Brown from the Department of Fish and Wildlife. The number 188 comes from the number of permits that were issued at the time that the limited entry system kicked in to effect, which was 1978. So at that time, there were 188 permits, vessels fishing for shrimp.
Okay. So that goes back to that 1978 figure.
That's right.
Okay. Senator Brennan?
Mr. Chairman, one more thing here I think maybe we failed to deal with in this, and that it probably should have an emergency clause.
I think we went through that, Senator Brennan, and we decided not to place an emergency clause on it because the effect of the bill, not so much the amendments, but the bill raises the boat license or the permit fee from $1 to $10, and a number of fishermen have already received the permit and $1, so that the department would then have to either charge them an additional $9 this year. I mean, they've already issued You've already issued a number of permits on the salmon side.
On the salmon? 1,500.
Already. 1,500 permits have already been issued at $1 a piece, so basically, as I remember, the bill, as it's currently drafted, takes effect January 1st, 1988, which makes it a lot simpler. We went through a whole process of developing amendments, which were rapidly rejected, which would have applied a number of the provisions in the bill on an emergency clause basis, but not the fee. But then you get into a whole problem of unequal treatment under the law. And I don't remember specifically what it was, but it made sense at the time that we should just put it all into effect January 1st, 1988. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Monroe.
You need a motion on that amendment change?
Yes.
Okay, I would move that the amendment 843-3, dated 3/16/87, be amended on page 2 in line 21 by putting a period after therefore, and by the way, you better add an E to the therefore too.
Okay.
While you're at it, and then striking the rest of line 21 and all of the underlying language in line 22 and replacing it with the sentence that you read that starts with however.
However, the number of permits issued pursuant to any such lottery shall not increase the total number of permits issued to a number greater than 188.
Right.
Senator Monroe makes the aforementioned motion. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Senator Monroe moves the amended amendments 843-3 as just amended by the committee. Is there any discussion of those amendments? Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Senator Brenneman moves Senate Bill 843 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Clerk, would you call the roll?
Senator Brenneman.
Aye.
Senator Hamby.
Yes.
Aye.
Senator Cairns. Oh, he's not here. Senator Kintai.
Aye.
Senator Monroe.
Aye.
Senator Bradbury.
Aye. Motion is adopted. Senator Bradman, will you carry the bill?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I want to very briefly open the hearing, public hearing on Senate Bill 842. Senate Bill 842 changes who represents the state of Oregon on the Pacific Marine Fisheries Commission. Now, I'm sure most of the members of this committee, except for Senator Brenneman and I, are saying, what is the Pacific Marine Fisheries Commission? It is a body that was formed by Interstate Compact probably, what, how many years ago? 1947, so it was formed 40 years ago. As a way for the states of California, Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and Alaska to work together on regional fishery issues. The commission distributes a large share of federal money for research and data development on the fisheries and plays a fairly central role in some of the fishery, biological fishery management issues. The desire of what this bill is trying to do is place some legislative representation on the team that represents Oregon on the Pacific Marine Fisheries Commission. The state of Alaska has a legislative representative on their group representing their state. The state of California has a legislative representative. The state of Washington does not, and the state of Idaho does not. So this bill's effort is to try to give the state of Oregon legislative representation on that commission. I have a fairly major long sheet here that talks about all the activities that the commission gets involved with. I don't think we need to get into that. Representative Hanneman. Representative Hanneman's here.
Mr. Chairman and members, Paul Hanneman, House District 3. It's my first appearance before a substantive committee this legislative session.
Is sitting on the other side. Not a substantive committee?
Yeah, a little different. Yes, I belong to a non-substantive committee. I guess that's the answer. In that, there are two reasons, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for this bill. Number one is that in the overtime period of 35 or 40 years since the commission was established, during that time in the mid-70s, the Federal Council was established under the Magnuson Act nationwide. The Pacific Fisheries Management Council now is another federal force which has management control over most of our fisheries in the United States. I suppose my argument would be in favor of the bill that we now have the older commission as well as the council. There are those in the audience who may argue that we need both, but the commission certainly had more force and effect when it was there by itself instead of with the council, which now has assumed many of the duties. Number two, last session we introduced legislation and passed legislation to form the Western States Fishery Task Force, of which your chair and Senator Brenneman and I serve. That was an attempt to parallel the Western States Fishery Forestry Task Force in these two major natural resources areas, and to bring the legislative side to some speaking ability and coordination among the Western states. The Fishery Task Force is concluding its 2 years, first 2 years in operation. And during that time, again, number two point in my discussion is that we now sit on the Fishery Task Force and listen to the Commission's comments about what they're doing, and perhaps the Commission is desirous of hearing us sitting in with them. The point is that if we overlapped in our memberships to some extent, we wouldn't have to do that either. So there's a need now with three fishery entities, one legislative and two governmental, to be better plugged together. And that's what this bill does. Essentially tries to either solder, weld, or super glue us together somehow a little bit better so that the coordination is there. I think the bill does it. Be happy to look at amendments you may suggest along the way or someone else's and see how those go. Anyway, that's the purpose of the bill as I see it as one of the sponsors. Thank you.
Questions for Representative Hanneman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the panel.
Raleigh? I assume that those are the only two people signed up.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Raleigh Russo, Deputy Director, Department of Fish and Wildlife. Some trepidation, I'm here supporting one half of Senate Bill 842. One item that I think the committee ought to be aware of, as your chair has already explained, the compact that was developed in 1947 is made up of five states. Each state has a single vote, and through informal agreement of the five states, they have chosen as an operating process, at least, that each state have three members. And those three members from Oregon now are the director of the Department of Fish and Wildlife, which by law, by compact law, the directors of each state have to be a member. So that one is non-discretionary. The other two, by choice, have been a members of the public in Oregon and in Idaho. And I believe, Mr. Chairman, that all of the coastal states other than Oregon have had a director of the Fish and Game, a public member, and a legislator. And I thought Washington had a legislator as well. At least California and Alaska certainly have had a legislator as a member, one of the three members of their commissions. I thought Washington did, and we believe it would be wise for Oregon also to have a legislator as a one of our three members. However, as this bill is drafted, it calls for two legislators. That gives you, for us, the choice of removing both public members so we have no public participation, or adding a member, which can be done, although we have an informal agreement that we're not bound by, to hold to three members. The other fact is that the PMFC will only pay for three members, so if we add members, that will be out of our pocket. It's our feeling that a legislator as one of three members would certainly provide the communication and coordination from this commission, from that commission, to this body that is intended by this bill, and would be a benefit. And so we certainly strongly recommend an enactment of 842, but would suggest that perhaps you amend it to only provide one legislator as member rather than two.
When you say a public member, it's my impression that basically what we're talking about is a commissioner from Fish and Wildlife. Basically, right now, as I understand it, the representatives on the commission are the director of Fish and Wildlife and two commissioners.
No, Mr. Chairman, it's a director, single commissioner, and I'm glad you brought that up, a Fish and Wildlife commissioner and a member of the public.
Oh, okay.
Of course, a commissioner, in a sense, is public. They're a non-salary.
So are we, for that
but,
matter.
Yeah, that's right. That's a good point, because I did want to make that. What we would suggest we do is replace the commissioner with the legislator rather than the member of the public. The member of the public would continue to serve as an Oregon member.
Who is the member of the public on that?
Don Christensen, and I believe that seat is now open, and the governor is in the process of perhaps nominating another candidate. Phil Snyder is the current member of the Fish and Wildlife Commission. And it would probably make more sense, although this is certainly, there are some options, we think it would make more sense that because the director of Fish and Wildlife is on there, that the communication probably is more important for the legislator to replace the commissioner rather than the member of the public.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I guess, let me just ask, this is a question. When it comes to, each state gets to cast one vote. And if you have three members there, two of them have to agree. Is that correct? Is that how the vote is?
Theoretically, that's correct.
But I mean, in theory, two people have to agree before the state can cast a vote.
Right.
Yeah, frankly, the way the bill's drafted, it was designed to give the legislature, two votes if it needed them.
You read it that way too, huh?
You're right.
That way.
All right. Any further questions for Mr. Rousseau?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else here who would like to testify on Senate Bill 842? Hearing no, we'll close the hearing on Senate Bill 842. Okay, and open the hearing on Senate Bill 508. Is Senator Cease here? Welcome.
Here we go again. Deja vu.
Deja vu. Do we get to keep any of those after the presentation?
It sort of sounded to me like he was attending some.
Yes.
volunteer, do you want me to just go right ahead?
Well, by all means. Introduce yourself and then proceed.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Jane Cease, and I represent Senate District 10 in Northeast and Southeast Portland. I want to thank you for the hearing. Some of you are going to hear things that you've heard before, but I don't know any way to present it in a different session. This bill, Senate Bill 508, proposes to keep the bottle bill honest and straightforward and coming back to where it belongs. It does only one thing. It puts wine coolers and only wine coolers under the bottle bill. And here's why. It's because they're being littered in unreasonable proportion to the portion that they're sold. The 1971 bottle bill addressed the market of 1971. The intent was clear. The success was evident. Bottles that get littered can and should be returned. But now the market has changed. Personally, I began to worry about wine coolers in 1983 when I noticed that they were left lying around while bottle bill beverage containers got picked up. I wanted to introduce this bill then, but the Recycling Opportunity Act bill took precedence. I did introduce this bill in 1985, and it failed by one vote on the floor of the Senate, having substituted for its contents Senator Brenneman's minority report. I have kept at it since then, and there is clear evidence that cooler containers are littered. Our Highway Division's litter survey last year shows that cooler bottles have a far greater share of beverage container litter than their share of the market. 8.5 times greater, in fact. Cooler bottles are showing up in our parks as well as on the roadsides, and there are other things showing up in litter too, and maybe you can address them in another bill. I think I've seen one that Senator Hamby and some other people have. But all I'm asking with this bill is that we add a very small thing to the bottle bill, a beverage container that is 2/3 of 1% of the market, but is in the litter 8.5 times more than that market share. And Mr. Chair, I would, as usual, like to end by pointing out the kind of containers that I'm talking about. Some of these containers are in the bottle bill and some aren't, and I don't think that there is any good reason why that container should be in the bottle bill and that container shouldn't. Also, I should point out there is one kind of cooler. Now, some of these are in and some aren't. There's one kind of cooler that is in the bottle bill, but it's because its base is a malt beverage base, even though it's called a citrus-flavored cooler. Our law does require it to be in the bill. I'd be happy to answer questions. I'd be happy to work with the committee on the bill. Whatever, Mr. Chair.
Questions for Senator Cease?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hamby.
Jane, do you know, Senator,
yes.
Do you know about the possibility of refilling the wine cooler bottles? Have you ever asked industry why they cannot be refilled?
No, I've never asked them about refilling any of the beverage bottle ones either. Some, I think, get refilled and some don't. Mm-hmm. The ones that don't get refilled, having gone to see at least one of the recycling places, and there are about 5 or 6 major ones around the state, mm-hmm. The distributors, if a bottle isn't going to be refilled, the distributors return those containers to the recycler, wherever it is, whether it's in Central Oregon or Southern Oregon or the Portland area, and those containers that don't get refilled get recycled, and they're paid for the material that they're recovering, whether it's aluminum or the steel can or the glass, and actually right now I think even the plastic ones are getting recycled.
Senator Kintai.
Yes, we have before us some figures by the Highway Division on litter composition that show that wine coolers are very very small part of the total litter. And the real litter problem is fast food containers and tobacco containers and other paper and so forth. I would appreciate your comment on that.
The reason we have the Highway Division's litter study is because I asked them to do it. Mm-hmm. And it had been a while since we had had any litter studies at all that were official Oregon litter studies. So I think the last time they did that was the years before and the first year of transition into the bottle bill and after the bottle bill had been in effect 2 years. And we wanted to see some parallels. And the studies that you, the figures that you show are correct, and they do show that cooler bottles are a small part of the litter, and that's why I mentioned in my testimony that there are other things that the committee might want to do something about. But this is the study that showed that even though wine cooler bottles are only 2/3 of 1% of the market share, their share of the litter is 8.5 times in proportion to what they are in the market. So they're way out of line as far as beverage container litter in that litter study. The thing the other thing that study showed was that there were two kinds of litter that I will hope that you'll be addressing with another bill. One is